ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Through the Opera Glass. First, let me thank Sydney Smith for jumping in at the last moment to engineer for me this morning. I'm going to have to find the time to do some engineering on my own, but right now, if it weren't for Sydney this morning, we wouldn't be on. Probably WBAI would be off the air. So thank you very much, Sydney, and it's always a pleasure to see you, and it's a pleasure to work with you. But this is Through the Opera Glass, a weekly feature of radio station WBAI-FM in New York, and it is streamed live on WBAI.org over the World Wide Internet. As indicated, I am Ivan Hammetz, your host this morning, and I'm coming to you live from our studios at 120 Wall Street in New York City. There are two reasons I am doing the program live this morning. First, I want to join the voices thanking the WBAI audience for its response to our recent fund drive. Your generosity ensures that we will continue to bring you opera on a regular basis, hopefully to uplift the spirit and hopefully for our listening pleasure. But please let me remind you that although our fund drive is over, and we have met our goals this time, WBAI is ever in need of operating funds. And if there's anyone out there, even at this horrid economy, who can spare additional funds, WBAI is more than happy to accept whatever you can send. This is not a solicitation. I've done enough of that for the time being. But our very generous listeners, every once in a while, someone asks whether he or she can receive credit for a contribution made at a time other than during a fund drive, and the answer, of course, is yes. And we most gratefully accept whatever you can spare. But enough of that. Just let me say thank you once again. I cannot adequately convey our gratitude for your response. The late Martin Sokol, the originator and first host of Through the Opera Glass, once did a series of broadcasts in which he presented almost all of the recordings of Enrico Caruso. And he passed away in the midst of another series, that one on John McCormick, the great Irish tenor. I've been asked several times by members of our audience whether I can resurrect either the Caruso series or complete the McCormick series. And it was long my ambition to do the latter. But the opportunity never presented itself, and the late Tony Cudgy, who I approached several times to complete the series, never did warm to the idea. I fear that I cannot complete that series, although I will continue to try to gather the necessary materials to do so someday. The Caruso series is a different story, however. I have all the recordings, and this morning I am inaugurating a series in which I will play all the Caruso recordings that have ever been released. It will, of course, take more than one program, and I will not devote every broadcast to the series. It is my intention this morning to do so every fourth Sunday until I have completed the Caruso recorded repertoire. Enrico Caruso was born on February 25th, 1873, in Naples, and died on August 21st, also in 1921, also in Naples. His original name was Enrico Caruso, the equivalent of Eric as opposed to Henry. He was the most admired Italian operatic tenor of the early 20th century and one of the first musicians to document his voice on gramophone recordings. Now, I'm going to be giving, in the midst, among the music, biographical and historical sketches, but I will not do it all at once because it is too lengthy. However, let me start with some historic and perhaps even contextual comments. Caruso was born into a poor, although not destitute, family. Although he was a musical child who sang Neapolitan folk songs everywhere and joined his parish choir at the age of 9, he received no formal music training until his study with Guglielmo Vergine at his age of 18. Within 3 years, in 1894, he made his operatic debut in Mario Morelli's L'Amico Francesco in Naples at the Teatro Nuovo. 4 years later, after adding a number of impressive roles to his repertoire, he was asked to create the role of Loris in the premiere of Umberto Giordano's Fedora in Milan. He was a sensation and soon had engagements in Moscow, St. Petersburg, and Buenos Aires. He made his La Scala debut with La Boheme in 1900. In 1901, after being unfavorably received at his performance in L'Elisir d'Amore in Naples, he vowed never again to sing in Naples, and he kept his word. Caruso then created the lead tenor parts in Adriana Lecouvreur, Germania, and La Fanciulla del West, and for the La Scala Company, the tenor roles in La Maschera and L'Elisir d'Amore. World recognition came in the spring of 1902 after he sang La Boheme at Monte Carlo and in Rigoletto at London's Covent Garden. He made his American debut in Rigoletto at the opening night of the Metropolitan Opera in New York City, of course, on November 23, 1903. And he continued to open each season there for the next 17 years, presenting at the Met 36 roles in all. His last public performance, his 607th performance with the Metropolitan, was as Eleazar in La Juive on December 24th, Christmas Eve, 1920. Caruso became the most celebrated and highest paid of his contemporaries worldwide. He made recordings of about 200 operatic excerpts and songs. Many of them are still being published today. His voice was sensuous, lyrical, and vigorous in dramatic outbursts and became progressively darker in his later years. Its appealing tenor qualities were unusually rich in lower registers and abounded in warmth, vitality, and smoothness. Such was Enrico Caruso's influence on singing style that virtually all subsequent tenors in the Italian repertoire have been his heirs to a greater or lesser degree. His operatic career spanned the years 1895 to 1920, a total of 26 seasons, but was cut short by a serious illness which eventually killed him at the age of 48. He remains famous, while few other early 20th century singing idols are still remembered by the general public. In the 21st century, this might be seen as remarkable, as unlike modern singers, he did not have access to sophisticated marketing and communications industry with the capacity to publicize his attainments instantly and globally via media. He did, however, become a client of Edward Bemet's, who's known as the father of public relations, during Bemet's tenure as a press agent in the United States. Biographers generally attribute Caruso's global success, in addition to the unique quality of his voice, to his sharp business sense, and to his enthusiastic use of cutting-edge technology for its time, commercial sound recording. Many opera singers of an older generation than Caruso's rejected the phonograph, or gramophone as it was known in those days, due to various factors such as the low fidelity of early discs, and their voices have been lost to us as a result. Other veteran opera singers of the first magnitude, such as Adelina Patti, Francesco Tamagno, and Nellie Melba, accepted the new technology after witnessing the swift profits generated by Caruso's initial recordings. Caruso made more than 260 extant recordings for the Victor Talking Machine Company, later RCA Victor, over a 16-year period, and earned millions of dollars from the sale of the resulting 78 RPM discs. These American-produced discs, recorded from 1904 to 1920, chart the development of Caruso's voice, born from that of a lyric tenor to that of a spinto tenor, to that of a fully fledged dramatic tenor, with a patent, almost baritonal timbre. Previously, in 1902, he had cut two series of records in Italy for the British Gramophone and Typewriter Company, the forerunner of HMV EMI. Let's cut off the talking for a while and start listening to some of Caruso's recordings. The first is from 1902, and it is Alberto Franchetti's aria, Studenti Udite from Germania. Enrico Caruso's 1902 recording from Alberto Franchetti's Germania, Studenti Udite. And we could hear the quality of the voice in that recording. We could only imagine what it would have sounded like with modern technology. But remember, he was just singing into a horn. There were no microphones. There is a visual record of Caruso, too. He appeared in a number of newsreels, a short experimental film by Thomas Edison, and two commercial motion pictures. For Edison, in 1911, he portrayed Edgardo in a film scene from Donizetti's Lucia dell'Amor. In 1919, he acted in a dual role in the American silent movie My Italian Cousin for Paramount Pictures. This movie included a sequence showing him on stage singing Vesti la Giubba from Leoncavallo's Pagliacci. The following year, Caruso appeared as a character called Cosimo in another movie, The Splendid Romance. Producer Jesse Lasky paid Caruso $100,000. And this, we're talking about 1919. To appear in these two romantic comedies, but both flopped at the box office. Let's listen to Caruso again, this time in what may be his most famous recording, and, well, maybe not. It's the second, but it is a very famous recording. It is also an early one, 1902, and I will be presenting these in sequence, in chronological sequence. This is from Giuseppe Verdi's Rigoletto, one of his favorite roles, and it is the first act, Questa o Quella, from Rigoletto, Enrico Caruso, and Verdi's aria.
Questa o quella per me. quando mi vedo, perché fuori l'impero non cedo, meglio ad una che ad altra beltà. La costoro a vedere se quel d'oro di quel pato lo infiora la vita. Così questa mi torna gradita, forse l'altra, forse l'altra, domani lo sarà pure. La costanza tiranna del cuore detestiamo col morbo crudele, sol ti vuole ti servi fedele, non l'amor se non da libertà. Degli amanti con le smani derido ancora largo i cent'occhi di sfido sempre punge una qualche verità a te.
Enrico Caruso with Giuseppe Verdi's Questa o Quella from Rigoletto. While Caruso sang at most of the world's foremost opera venues, including La Scala in Milan, the Royal Opera House Covent Garden in London, and the Teatro Colón in Buenos Aires, he is, of course, best known for being the leading tenor of the Metropolitan Opera for 18 consecutive seasons. One source tells us that his total Met appearances exceeded 1,800, while another tells us that his final public appearance was at the Met in his 670th appearance in La Juive. Now, I would assume, not knowing for certain, that when we say that his total Met appearances exceeded 800, that must have included performances on tour, because the discrepancy is much too large just to be a typographical error one way or the other, or a miscount one way or the other. That's over 130 different 130 difference. But in any case, regardless of whether he sang at the Met 670 times or 800 times, or even had it been 1,000 times, we are very fortunate to have Enrico Caruso on record, and very grateful to EMI for compiling the particular series that they have compiled and from which we are working today and will be working in the future. This is Ivan Hammetz. I am your host this morning on Through the Opera Glass, and I'm inaugurating a series of Caruso recordings that hopefully will span his entire recorded career. So let's continue, again with Verdi, which was apparently the third of his records made, and this is from the opera Aida. It is Celeste Aida, and we have Enrico Caruso singing Verdi's music once more. Oh,
le dolci prese del padre tuo. Pur regardendo sul crim posarti,
Enrico Caruso with a little bit more Verdi from Aida, Celeste Aida. And we can see what his style was. Well, Caruso's voice extended up to a high C in its prime. His virile vocal technique and his unaffected style of singing were totally without precedent. They combined the best aspects of the old 19th century bel canto with the ardent delivery, naturalistic phrasing, and big, exciting tenor sound demanded by 20th century composers such as the Verissimo opera, such as Puccini, Leoncavallo, Mascagni, and Giordano. Fellow singers found him to be an attentive colleague, and he was able to invest his operatic interpretations with an exceptional degree of emotional force without becoming lachrymose or hammy. Judging by contemporary reviews of his Met performances, he was a keen and sincere actor too, if not always a subtle one, and that's a quality that we often do not get in tenors of great voice and great singing ability. However, let's continue with Caruso on record, and we can hear his vocal acting, if you will. This is from Massenet's Manon, and it's known as Il Sogno. It's Chiudo gli Occhi, again from Massenet's Manon, which Caruso sings in Italian, although, of course, Massenet wrote Manon in French, and it's just a very pleasant recording.
Piccola casetta bianca in fondo.
From Massenet's Manon, we have just heard Chiudo gli occhi, sung by Enrico Caruso, and this was to a 1902 recording. Now, as that recording began, my engineer this morning, Cindy Smith, said, I love this piece. Well, I love it too. And I'm going to do something that may be a little weird, but so what? We're going to play it again and enjoy it again. Please, Sydney. Thank you. Was Enrico Caruso in an encore performance of Massenet's aria from Manon, Chiudo gli occhi. And let me say just something, a little bit more about Caruso. This is perhaps a repeat of something I said earlier, but he was... He came from a poor but not destitute background, and he was born in Naples at 7 Via San Giovanello agli Ottocali on February 25th, 1873, baptized the next day in the Roman Catholic Church of San Giovanni e Paolo, which was adjacent to his home. He was called Enrico in accordance with the Neapolitan dialect, according to one source, and he was nicknamed Eri by his family and close friends, but he would later adopt the formal Italian version of his given name, Enrico, because it sounded more cultured. Other sources tell us something that is presumably a little bit closer to reality, that Enrico is the Italian version of Eric, while Enrico is the Italian version of Henry, and... Enrico does sound a little bit more cultured, I guess, from his point of view. The name change was at the suggestion of his singing teacher, Guglielmo Vergine, with whom he began lessons at the age of 18, as I believe we said a little earlier. But let us continue with Caruso's early recordings. And these are all the ones we've heard thus far. And the next one, the from Gaetano Donizetti's Le Lise d'Amore, we're going to hear Una Fortiva Lagrima. And these have all been with the accompaniment of Salvatore Cartone on the piano. He was Caruso's initial accompanist, and he accompanied him through 1902 and into 1903, with one exception, and we'll get to that in a later on. So here we have, once again, let me repeat, Una Fortiva Lagrima from Le Lise d'Amore by Gaetano Donizetti and Enrico Caruso. Okay, that was Enrico Caruso in Donizetti's Una Fortiva Lagrima from Le Lise d'Amore. And his influence on later singers is patent through that recording, when we listen to that recording. All the great singers of the later part of the 20th century, later than he, tried to emulate that style. Some of them couldn't do it. And some great singers couldn't do it. And their Una Fortiva Lagrima always sounded hysterical or histrionic, as opposed to the Caruso recording, which is very contemplative, very pleasant, I almost said low-key, but I think you know what I mean. I'd like to continue, of course, with Caruso, and once again thank my engineer this morning who got me started, Sydney Smith, who is enjoying this program right now with me, and we expect a little bit relief for him. He's been on quite some time during the past several hours. But let us continue right now with Arrigo Boito's Junto sul Passo Estremo from his opera Mefistofele, which is his treatment, Boito's treatment, of the Faust legend. Again, we had Enrico Caruso, this time singing from Boito's Mefistofele, Junto sul Passo Estremo. We are continuing with this inaugural program of a Caruso series, which I've been asked by many of our listeners to resurrect from the days that Martin Sokol did one. But Caruso was the third of seven children born to the same parents and one of only three to survive infancy. There is an often repeated story of Caruso having had 17 or 18 siblings who died in infancy. Two of his biographers, Francis Robinson and Pierre Key, mention the tale in their books, but genealogical research conducted by Caruso family friend Guido D'Onofrio has suggested that it is an exaggeration. According to Caruso's son, Enrico Jr., Caruso himself and his brother Giovanni may have been the source of the exaggerated number. Caruso's widow, Dorothy, also included this story in a memoir that she wrote about her late husband. She quotes the tenor as follows in relation to his mother, Anna Caruso, née Baldini. She had 21 children, 20 boys and one girl, too many. I am number 19 boy, so spoke Caruso. But let's continue with Caruso's music, interleaving the selections from time to time with biographical or historical sketches, and not necessarily in the context of the music we're playing, which we're doing, chronologically. We have another recording with Salvatore Catone accompanying Caruso, and this is from Alberto Franchetti's Germania, and it is a different aria than the one we began this program with. This is A Vieni Chi, the recitative portion, and then Non Chiude Gli Occhi. So here we have Caruso again. Enrico Caruso with Arrigo Boito's Junto sul Passo Estremo. Well, wait a minute, I'm getting behind myself now. That was Alberto Franchetti's A Vieni Chi Non Chiude Gli Occhi. And it was from Alberto Franchetti's Germania. I just realized when I heard the final notes that I was getting behind myself. I forgot to cross off something on my list. But nevertheless, we enjoyed that. The next aria is Boito again, and it is from Mephistopheles. And this is not the aria we heard earlier, of course. It also is accompanied by Salvatore Cottoni, and it is perhaps the most famous tenor aria from Mephistopheles. In fact, it is the most famous tenor aria from Mephistopheles. The first time I heard Dai Campi, Dai Prati, I was blown away. And every time I hear it, I'm blown away again. Listen to the way Caruso sang the aria from Mephistopheles. And if you can, try to compare it mentally with other versions that you have heard. There are versions that are very pleasurable, and there are people who prefer others to this one. But for me, when Caruso recorded Dai Campi, Dai Prati around 1902 or 1903, and I think it was 02, he put the exclamation point and period and anything else of a diacritical mark at the end of his performance. It's one of those things that people do, but I don't believe it's ever been equaled. Boito's Dai Campi, Dai Prati from the aria Mephistopheles. Dai Campi, Dai Prati from Boito's Mephistopheles, as sung by Enrico Caruso in 1902, accompanied by Salvatore Cottoni on the piano. This is Ivan Hammetz, and you're listening to Through the Opera Glass with a kind of special program. I've begun a series on Enrico Caruso, in which I hope to present all of his recordings, and this is in response to requests from several of our audience. And I just love doing it. I love listening to these programs and these recordings. I always prefer this, particularly because of their age, to just sitting back and listening to a full-length opera, which we have to do occasionally for relief. Let me once again thank Sidney Smith, who began this program with me this morning, and he's now been replaced by Reg Johnson, who is, I guess we might call him my regular engineer, and he's obviously going to do his great job, like as I always believe. Good morning, Reg.
Good morning.
Hey. I surprised.
Yeah, I was.
Caruso's father, Marcellino, was a mechanic with a steady job. Initially, he thought that his son would adopt the same trade, and at the age of 11, Enrico was apprenticed to a mechanical engineer named Palmieri, who constructed public water fountains. Whenever visiting Naples in future years, although he wouldn't sing there any longer, Caruso liked to point out a fountain that he had helped to install. Caruso later worked alongside his father at the Mutacoffi factory in Naples. At his mother's insistence, however, he also attended school for a time, receiving a basic education under the instruction of a local priest. He learned to write in a handsome script and studied technical draftsmanship. During that period, he sang in his church choir and contemplated a full-time adult career in music, an ambition, of course, which his mother, who died in 1888, encouraged. In order to raise much-needed money, he performed as a street singer in Naples and at cafes and soirees. At age 18, he used the monies that he had earned by singing at an Italian resort to buy his first pair of non-secondhand shoes. His progress as a paid entertainer was interrupted, however, by 45 days of compulsory military service, but he completed this in 1894 and resumed his lessons with Vergine upon discharge from the army. Let us listen now to another recording by Caruso, and this is Puccini, E Luce Van Le Stelle, from Tosca, with Salvatore Catoni at the piano, also recorded in 1902. E Luce Van La Stella by Giacomo Puccini and Enrico Caruso.
La terra ride al lutto de morto, e un passo fiorava l'arena, entrava in la fragrante.
Puccini's E Luce Van La Stella from Tosca, we hear for the first time the Italianate sob that was emulated so often by later singers. Actually, it fits there. And when Caruso did it with style, elegance, and without prolonging the effect. It fits in E Luce Van La Stella, and it doesn't bother me at all. In other cases, I find myself having a little bit of difficulty putting up with it, but, you know, great singers have done it, and who am I to argue with them? Rather than belabor the point, why don't we go on to another 1902 recording, and this is from Mascagni's Iris. It is the serenata Apri la tua finestra, another aria that was sung many times by many tenors, and some of them reached a Caruso standard, some of them didn't. However, let's listen to Apri la tua finestra from Mascagni's Iris. Lesson for a singer in every note. How to sing out loud without shouting. Enrico Caruso in Mascagni's Apri la tua finestra from Mascagni's Iris, and it is also known as the Serenata, but it's just beautiful. This is Ivan Hammetz, and you are listening to Through the Opera Glass on WBAI-FM in New York, a weekly feature of this station and streamed live over the worldwide internet. I would appreciate it if you will contact me and tell me how you're enjoying this program and programs like it, and any suggestions you have for future programs. I can be reached either here at the station, WBAI-FM, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005, or by email at operaphile, O-P-E-R-A-P-H-I-L-E, at optonline.net. I hesitated there for a moment because my email recently got wiped out, and there were some things on there that I know that I did not respond to yet, and I would appreciate it if those people who did not get a response to me on the email would send your message over again. I would like very much to hear from you and to respond. I also have fallen somewhat behind on the written mail, but I will get to that as well, and I certainly appreciate every letter that is sent, whether it be whether it commends me, whether it lauds these programs, or whether it makes suggestions that would improve the program and points out some things that I could do better, which I learn a great deal from and from which I would like very much to respond, to which I would very much like to respond. But we are presenting Enrico Caruso in the first of what I expect will be a series of programs brought to you on the fourth Sunday of each month for as long as it takes us to present all of Caruso's recordings. And I'm doing this in response to a request from several of our listeners. I'm delighted to do it. I remember when Marty Sokol did it. And what he did at the time, having been played from 78 RPM recordings, vinyl recordings, or whatever they were, he gave you matrix numbers. And I'm not going to do that for two reasons. Number one, I don't have them all. And number two, it has become rather moot since we listen to Caruso and every other singer now, either on CD or in some cases on long playing records. But let us continue with Caruso. And we go back to Boito and Mephistopheles with an aria he recorded for a second time, again in 1902, and again with Salvatore Catone on the piano. And this is Dai Campi, Dai Prati, which he recorded, as I say, a second time. Now, what may have been the problem was you will have noticed a false start in the previous recording. He started with Da, and then there was more of the musical introduction, and then he finally went to Dai Campi. So this time he records it, and it's always fun to listen to. So here we have again Dai Campi, Dai Prati from Mephistopheles by Arrigo Boito, as sung by Enrico Caruso. Interestingly, that recording is 5 seconds shorter than the prior Dai Campi Dai Prati, but I don't know whether that had anything to do with a false start in the original one. Perhaps it did. Nonetheless, that was from Boitos Mephistopheles and Enrico Caruso singing Dai Campi Dai Prati. Caruso made his professional stage debut in serious music at the age of 22 on March 15, 1895. The venue was the Teatro Nuovo in Naples, and the work in which he performed was a now-forgotten opera, L'Amico Francesco, by an amateur composer, Domenico Morelli. A string of further engagements in provincial opera houses ensued, and he received instructions from the conductor and singing teacher Vincenzo Lombardi that improved his technical aspects of his vocalism. Two other prominent Neapolitan singers who were taught by Lombardi were the baritone Pasquale Amato, who would go on to partner Caruso quite often at the Metropolitan, and the tenor Fernando De Lucia, who would also appear at the Met, and later who sang at Caruso's funeral. But right now, let's listen to Caruso singing once again. And this is from Giordano's Fedora, Amor ti Vieta. This is one of those arias that has always been associated with Caruso and is a delight to listen to, Amor ti Vieta. That was Caruso and Giordano's Amor ti Vieta from Fedora. The pianist on that particular recording was the composer, Umberto Giordano. And an interesting historical note, and it's quite enjoyable to listen to. One cannot ever say that it wasn't a definitive interpretation of the music, since Giordano must have known what he wanted and the sound he wanted to hear. But of course it is a beautiful aria. It's also an aria that's associated with the tenor Jussi Björling. And Björling clearly modeled his interpretation, although it's stylistically somewhat different, on Caruso's. We go next, and we return to Verdi, and another aria that he recorded earlier. And this is Celeste Aida, from Aida, Enrico Caruso, singing Verdi's music for our pleasure. Even the popping from the 78 RPM transfer of Verdi's Celeste Aida did not detract significantly from the enjoyment of that particular recording. We are listening to Caruso, and as we will throughout today and several more programs in the future. And the reason we're doing this is, well, twofold. Number one, I love them, and I know most of my audience does as well. And number two, they have been requested, and I'm always happy to, whenever possible, comply with a request and to fill a request by any of our listeners. And this was, as I indicated, from many of our listeners. Let's go on now to the only recording Caruso ever made of a Ponchielli aria or song or anything else by Amilcare Ponchielli. And this is Cielo e Bar from La Gioconda. It is a 1903 recording. And here we have Enrico Caruso, Cielo e Bar. Oh, no, no, no.
angel mio verrà dal cielo, l'angel mio verrà dal mare. Qui la sento ardente stira, oggi
that, of course, was Enrico Caruso singing from Ponchielli's, Melcari Ponchielli's La Gioconda, Cielo e Mar. And again, the accompanist is Salvatore Catoni, as it was on the Celeste Aida. Now, Caruso had money problems, at least in the early years. Before he began to record, of course, when he became extremely wealthy and the recordings made a great deal of money for him. But money continued to be in short supply for him prior to that. One of his first publicity photographs, taken on a visit to Sicily in 1896, shows him wearing a bedspread draped like a toga, since his sole dress shirt was away being laundered. At a notorious early performance in Naples, and this is where he received his unfavorable reply, reviews, so to speak, he was booed by the audience because he failed to pay a claque to cheer for him, which was really an unfortunate thing, though, that claque business, which lasted quite a while. The incident hurt Caruso's pride, and it was at that time he vowed never again to appear in on the stage in Naples. And he stated later that he would return to Naples only to eat spaghetti. But fortunately, he didn't go up singing. And the next thing we have is what may be the aria that is most associated with Caruso. I do not believe his renditions of Vesti la Giubba were the best I ever heard. Sorry, I know that that is kind of sacrilegious, but that's unfortunately the way, well, maybe not unfortunately, but that's the way I feel. But we do have the first of what was apparently three recordings of Vesti la Giubba, from Ruggiero Leoncavallo's Pagliacci. It starts, of course, with Recitar mentre presso dal delirio, goes on to Vesti la Giubba, contains the Ridi Pagliacci, which is beautiful. Ridi Pagliaccio. And, well, let us listen to it. Again, Salvatore Catoni is on the piano.
Recitar,
posso farcela. Tu sei pagliacco.
Salvatore Cotone accompanying Enrico Caruso in Ruggiero Leoncavallo's Vesti la Giubba from Pagliacci. It is, as I said, an aria that is associated quite frequently with Caruso, and it's one that in which he introduced a different style and a different technique. It's a very interesting historical recording, as well as being one that is enjoyable to listen to. Let's return now to Mascagni, the Verissimo composer of Cavalleria Rusticana, and we have O Lola, the Siciliana, from Act One. Well, it's really, I suppose it's a one-act opera with an intermezzo, but Mascagni's O Lola from Cavalleria Rusticana, Salvatore Cotone accompanying Enrico Caruso.
Sangue sparso per
That was from Mascagni's Cavalleria Rusticana, O Lola, the Siciliana, sung by Enrico Caruso, and accompanied on the piano by Salvatore Catone. This is Ivan Hammetz, and you are listening to Through the Opera Glass. And this morning, as I said earlier, and for those who are just joining us, I am inaugurating a series of the Caruso recordings, hoping to get through all 200 or some now and in future programs, future broadcasts, which will be done on hopefully the fourth Sunday of every month from here on out until I have exhausted all the recordings. This is being done in response to listener requests that I do this, kind of resurrecting what Martin Sokol did many years ago when he broadcast the entire Caruso repertoire. He did so from 78 RPM Records, and which, of course, was much more difficult than what we're doing. We have them remastered on an EMI series that is absolutely delightful to listen to and just a lot of fun. It is actually, these are the old RCA Victor. As a matter of fact, I've been giving a lot of credit to EMI, who deserves a lot of credit for what they've done, for what really RCA Red Seal did, apparently. This is an RCA Red Seal compilation, and we're delighted to have it in any case. But let me go on at this point to a Neapolitan song. Caruso recorded several of the Neapolitan songs, and this one is by Luigi Danza. It is the very beautiful Non Ti Amo Più. The lyrics are by Di Giorgio. And again, we have a Salvatore Catone on the piano. But this is one of a group of songs that he did in 1903. Luigi Danza's Non Ti Amo Più. That was Luigi Danza's, excuse me, please, Non Ti Amo Più, with lyrics by DiGiorgio, sung by Enrico Caruso with Salvatore Catone on the piano. Now, let us go on to the next recording that he made, which was Paolo Tosti's La Mia Canzone, with lyrics by Cimino. And this, again, was done in 1903. It is with Catone at the piano. And, again, it's just one of these very pleasant Neapolitan songs that were done so beautifully in later years by Giuseppe Di Stefano. Here we have it with Enrico Caruso, La Mia Canzone, Paolo Tosti's Neapolitan song.
La mia canzone, un dolce mormorio, che sino a te ne Maria fredda fare, e se ti parla nel cor dell'amor mio, sarà per nulla, non ti può far male. Vagando sul tuo cardino qual cuore, e sta vuol dirti un'ultima desio, sulla tua bianca fronte vertinale, la mia canzone è il maco.
La Mia Canzone, sung by Enrico Caruso in 1903 with Salvatore Catone at the piano. And it was just one of the many Neapolitan songs that he was to record during his career. During the final years of the 19th century, Caruso performed at a succession of theaters throughout Italy, until in 1900 he was rewarded with a contract to sing at La Scala, the country's number one opera house. His La Scala debut occurred on December 26th of that year in the part of Rodolfo in Puccini's La Bohème, with Arturo Toscanini on the podium. Foreign audiences in Monte Carlo, Warsaw, and Buenos Aires also heard Caruso sing during this pivotal phase of his career. And in 1899-1900, he appeared before the Russian aristocracy at the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg and the Bolshoi Theater in Moscow as part of a visiting troupe of top-class Italian singers. But we listen to him now in Chilea's, The reason I hesitated, listen to this. It's from Chilea's Adriana Lecouvreur, No Più Nobile. And the pianist on this recording is, again, a composer. The composer, Francesco Chilea, and he accompanies Caruso on the piano. So here we have Caruso in a recording from Adriana Lecouvreur. That kind of just tails off at the end there. But in any case, it was Enrico Caruso singing Chilea's No Più Nobile from Adriana Lecouvreur. And it was with Chilea at the piano. I guess Chilea just simply wanted to keep playing. But that's okay. It was enjoyable. It's a lot of fun. And it certainly makes for an anecdote through history. The next thing we have is a song by Redento Zardo, and it is Luna Fedele. It again has Salvatore Cotone at the piano, and Caruso recorded this in 1903. It is with lyrics by Arrigo Boito, which... shows that Boito was as good at poetry as he was at composing music. We listen to it and enjoy it together on Through the Opera Glass this morning, bringing you I hope will be the first in a series of programs that presents all of Caruso's recorded music for our pleasure and the things that... things in which we can see why he was such a great influence, not only on his own generation, but on future generations as well. Again, I repeat, we have Redento Zardo's Luna Fedele with Enrico Caruso singing the words of Arrigo Boito.
Luna Fedele, voce di occorso. La pulcita mia dama sul cotico verrà. E se potrò vederla, olora astrofana,
Dento Sardo's Luna Fidel, lyrics by Arrigo Boito, as recorded by Enrico Caruso in 1903. That is a particularly interesting recording. I don't recall ever hearing it sung by anyone else, and I don't know why not. It's a beautiful song. Maybe they lost the music somewhere. I have no idea. That was tongue-in-cheek. Rocco Tremarchi also wrote Italian songs or Neapolitan songs. And we have one by Caruso, Un Bacio Ancora. And this, too, was a 1903 recording. And Caruso recorded it. I don't believe he recorded it a second time, but you know, let's hear it. It's Tremarchi's Un Bacio Ancora.
Un bacio ancora, melodia di Tremarchi.
Thank you. dammi un bacio, un bacio. Dammi un bacio di cuore, con tua bocca che me baci tu, con tua bocca che me baci tu. Addio per sempre.
Trabarchi's words and music to Un Bacio Ancora, as sung by Enrico Caruso in 1903. And it's one of those things that I believe was not recorded by him a second time. In fact, I'm pretty certain that he didn't record it a second time, as opposed to several other things that he did record two and three times for whatever reason. Now, we just heard, prior to the Tramarchi, Zardo's Luna Fedel, with words by Enrico Boito, recorded in 1903 by Caruso. Apparently, he recorded, not apparently, he recorded a second time also in 1903, and also with Cattoni at the piano, and probably in the same session in which he recorded the first one. We have again Sardo's Luna Fedel, lyrics by Arrigo Boito, and I don't know why it was recorded a second time, although you may have heard, again, he came in before the music at one point. But let's hear what the second one sounds like. Zardo's Luna Fedel, as recorded in 1903 by Enrico Caruso.
Luna Fedel, serenata.
Luna Fedel tu chiama, col raggio mio colpo, la fulgida mia dama, tu capito però.
interestingly, that was a reprise of Tzardo's, Redento Tzardo's, Luna Fidel, with lyrics by Arrigo Boito, as sung by Enrico Caruso. Although it was done in 1903, as was the prior one we played before the Tremarchi, which we played before this one, this is a full 32 seconds longer. And you begin to wonder, well, why did he do it? Actually, it is in keeping with the statement of a much later tenor named Jan Pierce, who said, you don't just do something and say, well, that's the way I do it. You should grow. I hardly believe he was able to grow in the days or a couple of days that it took between those two performances, both of which were they were accompanied by Salvatore Cotone, but they are different in the sense that the second is longer and does present a different kind of interpretation. And I don't know, I would love to hear from you people as to what you think of it, as well as what you think of the program and programming that we're doing, and whether you want me to complete this Caruso series. And I can be reached either by letter at 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005. This is, of course, WBAI FM. And you can reach me by email. Hopefully my email won't be wiped out again somehow. You know, these computers. But I'm at Operaphile, OPERAPHILE, at optonline.net. And I will, at some point, respond to every communication that I get, provided it is not obliterated by the electronic geniuses that have created the computer for our pleasure and consternation. As I said earlier, Caruso recorded several things more than once. And Donizetti's Una Furtiva Lagrima from Le Lise d'Amore was one of them. Earlier we heard it in a 1902 recording. Now we have it in a 1903 recording. And it's just slightly longer than the previous one. But it is pretty much the same kind of interpretation. It's hard to say why Caruso recorded it a second time. Perhaps he felt that the acoustics were better. Perhaps he felt that the technology had improved somewhat. I don't really know. But it is an extremely pleasant recording, as Una Furtiva Lagrima always is. And here we have Enrico Caruso and Donizetti, once again Salvatore Cotone, Enrico Caruso.
D'amore, una furtiva lagrima.
Una Furtiva Lagrima, Donizetti's aria from L'Elise d'Amore, as sung by Enrico Caruso in 1903. And that was a little bit longer than the previous recording of Donizetti's Una Furtiva Lagrima. It was only about 13 seconds longer. However, it probably resulted from his sustained holding of several of the notes, which was very effective. We are listening to Through the Opera Glass, a weekly feature of radio station WBAI-FM in New York, and we are streamed live on the worldwide internet. This is Ivan Hammetz. I'm your host today. And although this is a fifth Sunday, and I normally do these fifth Sunday programs with Mark Leosa, he is unavailable this week and or this month even for this program. So I'm doing it solo, and I'm taking the opportunity to inaugurate a series of programs on the recordings of Enrico Caruso, hoping to resurrect what Marty Tsokal did so many years ago and bring you all of Caruso's issued recordings. Excuse me. Caruso was the first, one of the early recorded voices that we heard or anybody ever heard. And it set a standard, not only by virtue of its being the initial voice and the initial interpretations, but because of the quality of the voice, the interpretations, and the transition from the elegant bel canto of the 19th century to the realistic and naturalistic verissimo of the early 20th, which continued for quite some time, particularly in the works of Puccini and Verdi and Mascagni, Giordano. The first major operatic role that Caruso was given responsibility to create was as Loris in Umberto Giordano's Fedora. And this was at the Teatro Lirico Milan on November 17, 1898. At that same theater, which of course was prior to his beginning his recorded career, but at that same theater on November 6, 1902, he created the role of Maurizio in Francesco Celea's Adriana Le Couvrier. He had hoped to create the part of Cavaradossi in Tosca at the Rome Opera at the start of 1900, but Puccini, after deliberating very hard, chose an older and more established tenor instead, and it probably... Well, it's hard to say, but of course, Caruso was Caruso. I'm not sure who the tenor was who was taken, but who was used. But Puccini came to admire Caruso a great deal, and Caruso Puccini's works a great deal. And one of the things that he recorded more than once, as a matter of fact, he recorded E Luce Van La Stella five times. The first, we heard one earlier, but here it is in 1903, having re-recorded E Luce Van La Stella from Tosca by Giacomo Puccini.
Tosca, E Luce Van La Stella.
That was the second of five recordings that Caruso was to make of E Luce Van La Stella from Puccini's Tosca. He also recorded Alberto Franchetti's Germania aria, Vieni Chi, Non Chiude Gli Occhi, three times. We heard the first one a little earlier. And in 1903, he re-recorded it. Again, it's quite a bit longer. This one is a 3-minute and 5-second recording. And the previous one, the one with which we introduced this program, was 1 minute and 53 seconds. I'm not certain whether or not that had anything to do with the technology or was simply a different recording medium. And it was a different recording medium because the first few records were made in Europe. But here we have Caruso singing from Franchetti's Germania, A Vieni Chi, No Non Chiude Gli Occhi.
Intorno al collo mio
a second rendition by Enrico Caruso of Alberto Franchetti's Vieni Chi Non Non Chiude Gli Occhi Vaghi, and again, Salvatore Catone at the piano. Caruso recorded both arias from La Donna e Mobile, both tenor arias from Rigoletto. He recorded both tenor arias from Rigoletto, from Verdi's Rigoletto, including La Donna e Mobile, in April 1903. And here we have his recording done in April 1903, as accompanied by Salvatore Catone, as we're introducing a series of programs on the recordings of Enrico Caruso. Although I said that I would be doing these on the fourth Sundays of the month, I will not do it on the fourth Sunday of December, preferring, of course, to do a holiday program. And I invite anyone out there who knows of any Kwanzaa music to let me know, because I don't have any, and I think that I would like very much to include it this year, although I have not been able to do so in the past. Of course, we will do Christmas and Hanukkah as well, but I just am enamored of the message that Kwanzaa brings to us. And there must be some music out there that is specific to the holiday. So please, if you know of any, let me know, and I will try very hard to include it. But right now, I would like to continue with the Caruso retrospective and go to the Verdi, La Donna e Mobile from Rigoletto. Caruso in April 1903.
Rigoletto, La Donna e Mobile.
La donna è mobile, quale più mal riso, ruta da tempo di pensiero, sempre una mattina legge al rovito, il pianto il riso è menso.
That is the first of three recordings that Caruso was to do of Verdi's La Donna e Mobile. And frankly, I am not enamored of the interpretation. However, it is Caruso, and it is part of this series, and it is an important part of the retrospective that we're doing on Caruso this morning. Again, I invite you to let me know. either at WBAI FM, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005, or at Operaphile, OPERAPHILE, at optonline.net, how you are enjoying this program, whether you wish me to continue broadcasting these Caruso recordings, and how you like the programming in general. Let's go on to another aria that Caruso recorded more than once, and this is from Mascagni's Cavalleria Rusticana. It is the Siciliane, O Lola, which begins off stage at the beginning of the opera. It is something that he recorded in April 1903, and it's excuse me. It's an extremely fine aria. This one also he made several recordings of. He made five that I know of, I guess. Yeah, I think either four or five. I'll let you know in a moment. But right now, let us listen to Mascagni's O Lola from Cavalleria Rusticana.
Cavalleria Rusticana, Siciliana.
That is one of, or the second of four recordings that Caruso was to make of O Lola from Cavalleria Rusticana. It is, as I'm sure you noticed, about 35 or 36 seconds longer than the prior one that we played this morning. We are listening to these Caruso recordings as part of a series that I intend to be doing, playing all of Caruso's recordings sometime between now and whenever we finish on one Sunday a month, except for the month of December, in which we will be doing a holiday program, and on the second Sunday we'll be doing something else, of course. Caruso embarked on his last series of performances at La Scala in March 1902, creating the principal tenor part in Germania by Franchetti. The following month, he was engaged by the Gramophone and Typewriter Company to make his first batch of recordings in a Milan hotel room for a fee of £100. These discs became bestsellers. Among other things, they helped to spread 29-year-old Caruso's fame in the English-speaking world. The management of London's Royal Opera House duly signed him for a season of appearances in 8 different operas, ranging from Verdi's Aida to Mozart's Don Giovanni. His successful debut at Covent Garden occurred on May 14th, 1902, as the Duke of Mantua in Verdi's Rigoletto. But now we have Caruso singing a song by Pini Corsi, Tu non mi vuoi più ben, with lyrics by Carbonetti. And this is recorded in October 1903.
Poi più bene, Fornello di Pini Corsi, eseguito dal tenore Caruso, Anglo Italia Commerce Company.
Antonio Pini Corsi's Tu non mi vuoi più ben, with lyrics by Carbonetti, as sung by Enrico Caruso in October 1903. As we indicated a little earlier, Caruso loved E luce van le stelle from Tosca, Puccini's wonderful, wonderful opera. And again, in October 1903, he recorded another version or another issue of E luce van le stelle by Puccini from Tosca. And we listen to it now and enjoy it, I hope.
Tosca, E luce van le stelle, eseguito dal tenore Caruso, Anglo-Italian Commerce Company.
Thank you. carezzava la terra, ride all'uscio dell'orto. E un passo sfiorava la vena, entrava in la fragrante.
Frankly, I could do without that overdone sob at the end of a Luceva le Stelle, as Caruso did it in October 1903. However, it is Caruso, and it is part of the recorded legacy. And we've played it, and would have played it in any case, but that was another of Caruso's interpretations of a Luceva le Stelle, as we're listening to him today. Caruso pretty much specialized in the Italian repertoire. He did go into the French repertoire, specifically for our next recording, and it is Giacomo Meyerbeer's Chi sotto il ciel from Gli Huguenotti, which is better known to us as Les Huguenots. And it was done by Caruso in Italian, which is not as satisfying, perhaps, as in the original French, but it is a very fine recording, and I'm sure that we will all enjoy it. From Giacomo Meyerbeer's Gli Huguenotti, or Le Huguenot, if you prefer, Chi sotto il ciel.
Gli Huguenotti, Chi sotto il ciel, eseguito dal tenore Caruso, Anglo-Italian Camera Company. Signor,
Caruso singing from Giacomo Meyerbeer's Le Huguenot in Italian, Chi sotto il ciel, and the Italian title of the aria of the opera is Gli Huguenotti. In 1903, Caruso came to New York and took up a contract with the Metropolitan Opera. The gap between his London and New York engagements was filled by a sequence of performances in Italy, Portugal, and South America. His Met contract had been negotiated by his agent, the banca impresario Pasquale Simonelli. Caruso debuted at the Met in a new production of Rigoletto on November 23, 1903. A few months later, he began a lifelong association with the Victor Talking Machine Company, and he made his first American recordings on February 1, 1904, having signed a lucrative financial deal with Victor. Thereafter, his star-type recordings and the career would run in tandem with his equally stellar Met career, the one bolstering the other, until he died in 1921 at the age of 48, taken much too soon from among the operatic-going audience, from among the music-loving audience of the time, and really cutting down on his already ample legacy in the recordings that he did for us, not knowing that he was doing them for us, of course, but nonetheless. We now have another recording of Questa o Quella from Rigoletto, from Verdi's Rigoletto. It is the same aria that we had did second on our program this morning. This one being just about the same length as the first. And it was obvious that Caruso liked singing Verdi's music, and particularly, I would imagine, Rigoletto, because it was his debut opera in La Scala. So here we have Questa o Quella from Rigoletto.
Questa quella per me pari solo a guardar, ed intorno, intorno mi vedo, del mio cuore l'impero non cedo, meglio ad una che ad altra beltà. La costoro a venere poi qual d'oro, di quel padre di Dio. Vita, di questa mi torna gradita, forse un'altra, forse un'altra, un domani lo sarà un'altra, forse un'altra, domani lo sarà. La comparsa tiranna del cuore detestiamo, quel morbo crudele, a chi vuole si servi fedele, in alva amor sono la libertà, dei mariti il gemoso furore, degli amarti le smorte. Rido, manco d'argo, i cent'occhi di sfido, se mi punge, una qualche beltà a ti. Mi punge, una qualche beltà.
Enrico Caruso, in his debut role at the Metropolitan Opera in New York City, from Rigoletto, Questa o Quella. He recorded La Donna e Mobile also in October 1903. I guess it coincided with his forthcoming debut at the Met, but he recorded it, as I said earlier, and the interpretations are pretty much the same. This one is just a little bit shorter by about 15 seconds, and we have it here as recorded in October 1903. Again, we have Enrico Caruso in Rigoletto.
La donna è mobile, quale più mal verbo, muta d'accento e di pensiero. Sempre una mobile, legge a tuo viso, il pianeto in riso e un lento iero. La donna è mobile, quale più mal verbo, muta d'accento. Pensier, di pensier, di pensier. E sempre mi trovi a lei t'affida, la colpita mal cauto il cuore, ormai non sente di felice a pieno, chiuso quel sero, non li fa amore. La donna è mobile, qual più mal vento, muta da te. Pensier, di pensier, di pensier.
Once again, the magic of a singer singing out loud without shouting. It's just a wonderful recording, and I truly enjoy it. Caruso was to record Una Furtiva Lagrima from Donizetti's Le Lisi d'Amour four times. Only once, though, and this is in our next recording, he sang it, and he continued at the end of the aria with Un Solo Istante. And this is a very interesting historical recording. It is the only time Caruso sang Una Furtiva Lagrima, at least on recording, with the Un Solo Istante. And we hear it now as recorded. Sometime, I believe, in early 1904, but I am not certain at all. So here we go.
Thank you.
I suppose we could say that that was Caruso showing off with another rendition of Una Furtiva Lagrima. But it's worth listening to, and obviously it's part of his history, and if we're going to do a retrospective, including all of his recordings, then we're going to have to include things like that also, whether we are pleased with them or not. Caruso purchased the Villa Bellosguardo, a palatial country manor near Florence in 1904. That villa became his retreat away from the pressures of the operatic stage and the grind of travel. His preferred address in New York City was a suite at the Knickerbocker Hotel on the corner of 42nd Street and Broadway. And New York and the Metropolitan Opera came to mean so much to Caruso. He commissioned the jewelers, Tiffany and Company, to strike a commemorative medal made out of 24-karat gold, which he presented, the medal was adorned with his profile, and he presented it to Simonelli as a souvenir of his many performances at the Met. We're going to listen now to another rendition of Verdi's Celeste Aida, as recorded by Caruso in 1904. And he did an awful lot of Verdi and Puccini, and this is one of the better recordings of Celeste Aida, in my opinion. But here we hear it, Caruso in 1904.
Tu di mia vita sei Lord.
patria suol. Un regal certo sul prim poterti per terti il cielo vicino.
I'm afraid that's about all the time we have for music this morning. This is Ivan Hammetz. We've been listening to Through the Opera Glass and recordings by Enrico Caruso from his early career. For those who tuned in late and didn't hear it, it is my intention to play all of Caruso's recordings, kind of retrospecting what Martin Sokol did several years ago and at the request of several of our listeners. I would like to know very much how you are enjoying this, how you are enjoying the programming in general that we do on Through the Opera Glass. And you can reach me at WBAI FM, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005, or by email at operaphile, OPERAPHILE, at optonline.net. It's a pleasure to be with you on the second and fourth Sundays of the month. I know today is the fifth Sunday. Unfortunately, Mark Leosa was unavailable this month, but we look forward to his return on the next fifth Sunday. This is Ivan Hammetz signing off with my usual wish for you. Days of sunshine, nights of poetry, a lifetime filled with beautiful music, and dreams so wonderful that they are beyond realization. Please stay tuned for Chris Wendt and Here of a Sunday Morning, a wonderful program that I listen to, if not live, then on the archives. It is a real treat. I would like to thank both my engineers this morning, Sydney Smith, who started me off, and Reg Johnson, who has finished me. And now, this is Ivan Hammetz, leaving and turning the microphones over to Chris Wendt at Here of a Sunday Morning.
You have been listening to Through the Opera Glass, a regular weekly feature of radio station WBAI. You can hear Through the Opera Glass again next Sunday at 6 a.m. You are tuned to WBAI New York. Stay tuned for Year of a Sunday Morning. As you hear, we have some technical problems. Let's start all over again.